Jenny, overall, how are things going with emergency management?
Well, first of all, I'd say I've just concluded my first 6 months on the job with the Sheriff's Office and the county as emergency manager, and I feel very fortunate once again to be the county emergency manager. And I do have a lot of things to bring today, kind of update things and information, and as you suggested, some links to additional information. And I look very much forward to continuing my time with the Sheriff's Office and the county.
Well, Jenny, you've completed your first 6 months, as you've said. I do want to just briefly recap your history. I mean, you've always been fascinated with preparation and emergencies. Any reason that this has fascinated you throughout your life?
Well, it's just been my passion. It was one of those job experiences where you became involved as in a support role, and I learned more and more and had educational opportunities provided to me, and it just really became my niche. I mean, it was just something that I was very interested in, and I was very very beneficial to work for an organization as Samaritan Pacific Communities Hospital that really encouraged that concept of further education, and then that transferred over very nicely when I moved over to the Sheriff's Office.
Well, folks listening to us today, you do want to be aware that Jenny presented at the Board of Commissioners meeting last week talking about the January storm, the federal assistance process that we went through. And there's a link to that on the county homepage. Also, you presented to Congressman Kurt Schrader the other day and talking about public outreach. And so I really like seeing you advocate for Lincoln County, and it seems to me like you're doing a wonderful job. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I would like to touch on, if anyone has time, if they're interested in what the process was, there has been some confusion or sort of, how does that process really work that we get that federal declaration? Why didn't Lincoln County and the other counties get that declaration? So if you have time to log on to the county website and go to the Board of Commissioners area and view that particular portion where I did a presentation to them, it fully explains the process that we went through during that basically 12-week period of time from when the storm began until we got the final conclusion of the denial of the appeal. And it just talks about what did our citizens go through and how do we manage during that time. And what do those time frames actually look like? So if you have time to take a look at that, it'll give you everything you need to know.
Can we springboard into the subject of the January storm since you're talking about that? Because one of the things you said to the congressman was that public outreach component. How does that fit into what you see as sort of a challenge with the January storm as it unfolded?
Yeah, so that's a good point. One of my points that we were all asked to express, pitch something to the congressman that was important to us, that had value, that he might be able to influence or keep, on his agenda as he moved forward. And so my concern was I'm seeing repeatedly over and over again through the Oregon State Fire Marshals or Homeland Security or other avenues that public outreach funds, the funding that we need to help educate the public or help change the culture. Point in case is most individuals have ingrained to them that 72 hours is the time frame that you need to be prepared. And that's really not the case, especially here on the Oregon coast with the hazard vulnerabilities that we have with the earthquakes and the tsunamis. Our citizens need to have a 2-week preparedness period. I know the Oregon Red Cross and I and all of the emergency response agencies are trying to work towards changing that culture. And so that's what I expressed to the congressman is, in order to be able to effectively change that culture with the other public safety agencies, we have to have a continuation of those public outreach funds. Now, part of that outreach is those emergency readiness fairs that we did, doing outreaches when we're going to senior centers, adult foster homes, neighborhood support groups, a faith-based community, and doing public outreach with them, marketing campaign tools that we use. It takes funding to be able to do that, and that's not something that's easily put into your operational budget because it is sort of extra. I mean, you could live without it, but if you want to be effective in getting people prepared, you have to change that culture and mindset. And that takes a lot of energy because you're starting at the very ground level, working with your schools to change a children's concept, which let's just say we know Sue Graves, Lincoln County School District, has done an amazing job with educating our children on those preparedness efforts. But we have to work with our local businesses. They have got to be ready. They've got to have that business continuity planning. And even though I've said, I'm a department of one, but I'm a team of many with all of our public safety agencies, and we have to have the same message going out to all those organizations.
The repetition, it's necessary, and I think my experience this weekend, I had a little aha moment where, we worked all weekend on the flower planters and getting the deck ready and getting the garden ready and probably put in, 16 hours over the weekend. And here sits my partially complete bug out kit and in the office. And it's fairly well developed. I have to say we have spent some time on it. But, you know, our sense of priorities about this, it seems out of mind, out of sight. And we forget so quickly. Well, and what's the nature of psychology? Why are we like this?
Well, it is one part denial. It is very comfortable to live in denial. The other part is truly financial. Many of our residents do not have the financial resources to go out and buy a brand new kit or public outreach. We're still trying to reach them to educate them of what items they could put in their kit or how you could build it yourself. And what I would say, and I always leave these type of radio shows, is making sure that everybody takes that 15 minutes to just sit down and say, is my kit ready to go? Is it updated? Do I have the information that I need in there? Is there a kit in my car? Do I have one at home? And do I have one at my business? And one of the good rule of thumbs, I tell people sort of a scare tactic, if you will, the clothes that you have on and the shoes that you have on and the food that you have in your pocket or on your being, is that going to be enough to get you through for the first 72 hours until our public safety agencies and our government institutions get back up and running and get things, you know, going in a worst case scenario? So can you survive with exactly that you have right now, Casey, and for 72 hours?
Yeah.
The
answer is no.
There you go.
It really is no. And one of the and the process we've gone through, which I think is kind of a methodical process, we've got the ready.gov checklist.
Yep.
We've gone through different variations actually in bags now. Our most recent type of bag is a convertible backpack type bag. But one of the things we're struggling with, I think, is the fact that these bags are heavier than we've anticipated.
Right.
So we're listing everything off and we're going, man, that's a lot of stuff. So, but shrinking down the size of the duct tape. I mean, I've got so much duct tape everywhere.
So the thing to think is, do you really need duct tape in your to-go bag? I mean, so you have to think about what is the intent of the bag. The kit that you might have in your house that's like, and I tell people, in the one in your house, get one of those used suitcases with wheels on it and have that in the front closet. That's really more effective, because if you're leaving your home to evacuate until you can evaluate if your home is safe to be in or going to a shelter, then that makes sense. But the to-go kit that you keep in your car, it's going to be much more limited, just really food, water, and warming shelter devices. You know, you're not necessarily going to be using duct tape to shelter up your car. You're going to be sheltering in place in your car or moving, being mobile, going somewhere else. The other thing I remind people, if you have a to-go kit for your children, as the seasons change coming into fall and coming into spring, go through your child's kit and change the clothing. The kids grow, as we know, twice a year. And when you don't want to be stuck somewhere and realize the clothes and sweatshirts that you have for your children are no longer the right size.
You know, Jenny, maybe we should do an experiment on me. When I think I've got our kits ready, maybe we should just film me.
There we go.
And you tearing apart these kits and you going, that's too much duct tape, Miller. And that would be a good experiment for us to see the process, because we're getting close. But once again, like you say, part denial. We have these other things that seem like a priority in our life. And the January storm really pointed out that we can have this variety of incidences happen at once.
Well, and not only the January storm, Casey, but remember 10 weeks later when we had 3 to 4 inches of beautiful snow on the beautiful Oregon coast and people said, what?
Yeah.
Wait, they didn't say we were going to get snow at the beach. Well, it happens. And so people are caught unaware. And so that's why you have to have that preparedness efforts well in advance so that you're not caught unaware. And you're the individual that's able to say, hey, I don't care if there's snow. I got what I need in my car and I'm good to go.
Yeah. Well, in the case of Cascadia, we're looking at such a narrow window too, possibly, of getting out. So
yes,
it's got to
be
really
a very long-term event. But a couple of things when we have time after the break, I'd like to talk about the earthquake mitigation methods that you can do in your business or home. Very simple, inexpensive methods.
Lincoln County Connections. We're talking to Virginia Damaris. She's our emergency services manager. Question you may have is, why is Virginia on the program so much? It's because public outreach repetition is something that she thinks is very important, and I agree with her that we can never stop preparing enough or creating the correct psychology to survive a disaster. And one of the things not talked about as frequently maybe are some of these other ideas around earthquake mitigation techniques. What are you speaking of?
So first of all, I'd like to point out to individuals, one of the most important things that you can do is simple earthquake mitigation efforts in your home and your business. And here's the reasoning, the justification. If an earthquake occurs, whether it's a moderate one or a significant one here in our beautiful Oregon coast, your home or your business needs to be able to continue to act as a place of shelter. If we had all of our residents decide to leave their structures and go to an assembly area or a shelter area, we would not have enough buildings in our community to house everyone. So it's critical, just like it is to have your emergency readiness kit, it's critical to do the safety measures in your home so that you can continue to stay in your home as a place of shelter, because you know you've got linens, clothing, you've got food, you should have water, and you have shelter. That is where we want you to stay rather than migrating your way to a shelter, because we won't be able to have enough sheltering facilities for everyone in the community. So what are some of those examples of earthquake mitigation? Well, earthquake mitigation is really using techniques to secure items to the wall or to your floor or to a desk service or, for an example, your hot water heater. They now have earthquake mitigation straps that you actually wrap around your hot water heater and secure it to the wall. So when the earth starts shaking and things start moving, your water tank is going to stay put. That will prevent you from having a flood of probably 75 gallons of water in your laundry room or your garage or in your kitchen. It will also prevent a potential natural gas leak if the lines stay intact. And also just financial damage. Let's say it's a moderate earthquake, but for some reason that's the particular item that falls over or tips over. Well, now you have no hot water. So, and you have to shut the water off to your house. You'll have to shut the gas off. You'll have electricity issues. All of that can simply be prevented by using that earthquake mitigation technique. Now, you should be able to go down to any of your local hardware stores and pick that up. I'm sure Northwest Natural Gas has a link on their website of how to do that process. And if you go to a publication that Oregon Emergency Management has put together last year through Althea Rizzo's office, Living on Shaky Ground, it's a publication that talks about tsunami and earthquake, the geology and how those occur, but it also talks about the seven steps to protect yourself and your home, and in particular, earthquake mitigation tips that will lead you through that process in your home or your business. A couple of other very simple tips are you have beautiful china hutches with lots of glass. You can secure those to the wall with L brackets up on the top or on the back where you can't see them. It won't affect the view. You can also use non-slip surfaces that you can put under your glassware, or even they have a putty type surface. Also, a really great thing is Velcro. You have an expensive LCD monitor on your TV. You can Velcro strips to the surface and then to the TV if you can't secure it with a strapping device. If you have other expensive equipment, a smaller LCD monitor or TV, any electronic devices, double stick tape with Velcro works great. There's all different types of brackets that are specifically made to use in that process, and they're you're talking $1.50, $3, $5 at the tops to buy these type of brackets and then secure them to the wall.
Yeah. Well, I have to say I've gone through a similar process because I have a 20-month-old who's climbing over everything.
Right.
But, you know, the flat-screen TVs, they have screw holes in the back. So I've used chain and then a stud finder to find the studs. So all of our bookshelves are pretty secured. But you're right. These are pretty inexpensive materials to acquire at your local building supply stores, and that may mean being able to shelter in place for
longer. Thing I would like the listeners to think about, right now you have daylight, you can see what you're doing, the light switch works. Imagine it's 3 o'clock in the morning, there's no light, your bed starts shaking, you need to duck, cover, and hold. But it's dark. The electricity has gone out. You hear things crashing all inside your home, and you feel the need to evacuate your home for safety.
Yeah.
Do you have shoes underneath your bed and a flashlight and a rain poncho or a rain jacket? Now, a good point that came from Althea's emergency readiness fairs and road shows that we did, put those inside a small bag that you attach to your bedpost or attach to your bed surface somewhere, because when everything starts shaking, those shoes and flashlight are going to move away and they will no longer be accessible to you. So put them in a small bag and either, you know, attach them, put them in your nightstand drawer so that when you are in the middle of the night and it's dark, you can grab your flashlight, put on your shoes for safety and a coat, something, because we know, on the Oregon coast, it rains a lot of the time, and we don't want you to get completely soaking wet when you evacuate your home. Then if you have to walk over glass surfaces and such, your feet are going to be protected because there aren't going to be any lights unless the public utility infrastructure has survived that type of earthquake.
So you've seen some critical mass gain, especially since our tsunami, towards readiness, towards preparation. And the readiness fairs were one of those outreach tools that you've been using. Are we going to see more readiness fairs? Where's that going?
We are. So this was actually the first time that Lincoln County, with our public safety partners, put together the same message. So we hosted five sites in Lincoln County that had the same material, same information, same public safety agencies providing the same message. And what our goal is to be able to continue this and try and do this twice a year. We're actually thinking about doing a larger venue so that we could bring in vendors and other items so that if you want to purchase a to-go kit, you could come down there, purchase it, and take it with you. We see a lot of people that say, I'd just buy one if you had one right now. And also, too, it helps us reach a different audience if we do this on a continual basis. I know that Northwest Natural Gas is planning for a safety emergency readiness day up in the city of Lincoln City in conjunction with the North Lincoln Fire District. We're going to be supporting them in that role and participating. That will probably be our kickoff, I think, the second week of September. And then we're hoping to do down in the city of Waldport, really trying to hit every area during the month of September and October. And the one thing I would like to have everyone set a goal of, October 18th at 10:18 in the morning, the entire Pacific Northwest and other states such as Idaho and I think even Nevada, we're all going to be participating in, we're referring to it as the Oregon Great Shakeout. So at 10:18 in the morning on October 18th, they are going to simulate an earthquake has occurred, and everyone that wants to participate will go into their duck cover and hold procedures and then simulate that they're responding to that type of an event. So if you're thinking ahead, you got about 5 to 6 months to get your go kits ready, think about your plan, think about your business plan, where you're going to be, and then encourage your kids, neighbors, friends, faith-based groups, to everyone to get involved and go for it and actually practice your steps. And then here on the Oregon coast, something else to think about. The Department of Geology is in the process of remapping the inundation zones across the entire Oregon coast. Lincoln County will be one of the last counties to complete that process, and we are scheduled to have our mapping redone in October if funding holds out and there are no issues. But what that's going to do is that's going to change our inundation zone mapping for all of Lincoln County. And it's estimated on average at any one particular place that the depth of which of your inundation zone will go up an additional 50 feet. So you may not have been in the standard inundation zone last week, but when we move to this new mapping, your home or business may now find itself within that official inundation zone, which means you need to think about your plans.
And I imagine we're going to have a lot of public outreach.
Yes.
When that comes down the pipeline too. And I can see how people are going to feel, maybe be in a little bit of shock.
Right.
So look for that information to be forthcoming. You know, Jenny, maybe what we need to do is have an emergency go kit treasure hunt, like the Amazing Race, where people run throughout the community at different locations.
Yeah, scavenger hunt.
Something like that to think about more about what they would put in those. Well, thank you so much, Jenny. And last plug here in our last minute, how do we sign up for Everbridge and how important is it?
Yep. You want to go to www.lincolncountysheriff.net and look for the citizen alert icon. And that's where you'll go. Click on there. You create your profile. It's really simple. And then you will start receiving the emergency alerts or communications directly from the Lincoln County Sheriff's Office for designated emergencies.
I received several of those through all of these events. And you can have them delivered a number of means, right? Cell phone, home phone,
text message, email, however you'd like to see them. You have 10 different options. And what it does is it starts at the first device that you've given in your profile and will call down or connect with each of those devices that you've provided.
Well, it's very easy to do. Like Virginia was saying, go to the sheriff's website, the county's homepage. We've got icons all over the place. Everbridge, look for the Everbridge icon. Just takes a few moments.
And what I would say, if you have a question in the internet, it's just too confusing, give our department a call, Emergency Management, the Sheriff's Office, 541-265-4199, and we will be more than happy to assist you.
Well, thank you, Virginia, and thank you for listening. And we'll see you next week on The Cup.